School we loved, Elmhurst lived for aye. God shed his grace on thee. Loyal be thy sons and daughters to thy memory.
Hello, I'm Dr. Janice Tuck-Lively.
And I am Dr. Erica McCombs. Welcome once again to the Elmhurst University Calling All Voices podcast. In continuation of our sesquicentennial year celebration, this podcast charts the growth of a small pro-seminary into the much-beloved Elmhurst University. Through interviews with students, faculty, staff, and alumni, we will uncover how this institution charted its path and where it hopes to go in the future.
As a part of our mission at Elmhurst University to cultivate the idea of calling, on November 22nd, Reverend H. Scott Matheny, the chaplain of Elmhurst University and dean of religious life, sat down with the Reverend Robert Ullman, a member of the Board of Trustees and a graduate of the class of 1974, to discuss the meaning of institutional and personal calling. The following broadcast documents that conversation.
Bob, you have taught me regularly about the family of Elmhurst and the notion of how the family brings us together, and that there's a history. That might be a great way to get us started, Bob, is there's a history of what brought you to Elmhurst University that nurtured and cared for you and loved you and sent you out into the world and caught your imagination. So tell us a little bit about that family story.
Well, you know, I didn't really probably understand it or fully appreciate it then as I do now. But growing up in an evangelical Reformed church in Southern Illinois, which was obviously the parent denomination of Elmhurst, anybody from our small little farming congregation that went to college went to Elmhurst. That was just where people went. And so I had a friend who was 2 years ahead of me and went to Elmhurst, and I went to visit him. And I've felt this way ever since about helping any student find a college. You need to be there and spend some time there and see if it feels like the right place for you. And boy, it sure felt like the right place for me. Secondly, a piece of that was I had grown up like visiting Chicago with my parents and their friends every summer, and I loved Chicago. And so that was kind of the icing on the cake. Elmhurst felt right as a school for me, but also it was close to Chicago. And when I was there, I certainly made full use of the proximity to Chicago. So that's sort of just on the surface, the family stuff. But now that I've, you know, graduated from Elmhurst and been on the board and learned more about it, the family feeling goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And I have relatives that went there, previous generations that I didn't even know, were relatives or had gone to Elmhurst. And so my personal family has a long, generational long history at Elmhurst. And I've only learned that more recently. But also the history now that I was thinking about for this interview is we're talking about the sesquicentennial of the founding of the school. And what I've learned about that too, to start as a pro seminary, which was really a prep school for, at that time, young men going into the ministry, I've thought about, you know, connecting to the values that we still hold to as a university now, that those Germans, German immigrants, settlers that came here clearly valued intellectual excellence. They wanted a clergy that knew stuff and that were educated. And, you know, their schools that educated them were back in Europe. And so they needed a place here to begin that education. So it was sort of like, you know, that really is at the core of who we are, is the whole sense of intellectual excellence. And they couldn't have imagined then what we understand to be the scope of intellectual excellence now. But that essence, I think, has been there from the very beginning. So that's point one. And number two, I think early on they figured out that it wasn't just educating young men for ministry, but there was also a role for the teaching ministry of the church. And so very early on, not only were they preparing people for ministry, but they were preparing people to go into the classroom. And I just think about, you know, 150 years later, our education department is one of the strongest departments in the university. And
absolutely,
here we, you know, here we are. Again, they couldn't have imagined what the requirements for primary and secondary education could be in the 21st century, but we continue that tradition as well. And then the other thing I was thinking about, as I'm thinking about sort of the history of what Elmhurst has really tried to live out all these years, is really that quote that's on the front of the Union from H. Richard Niebuhr about the most urgent need of this present generation is light and warmth, the light of knowledge and the warmth of high idealism. And that was from the Roaring Twenties. So 100 years ago, H. Richard Niebuhr, you know, penned that quote. And I'm thinking, you know, given what we're facing these days, I can't imagine anything we need more than light and warmth and knowledge and high idealism. And as I get to know our students, current students, I think there are many of them with that sense of high idealism. And that's another value that I think continues.
So that value of high idealism, I know, is expressed a lot in the social realms of society. And you have talked with me as the chaplain of the university a lot about journeys, and as Sharon Parks talks about big questions, worthy dreams, and our capacity to capture the imagination. What captured your imagination, Bob, when you were here, whoa, those years ago as an undergraduate that then trajectoried you off to Eden Seminary and into the great places that you've served? There's a connection there, I think, between that intellectual rigor, the family, the core values of the institution of social responsibility and justice, and being able to see that as a lifelong calling, a vocation.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking what captured me at Elmhurst expanded on that sense of family, and that was community. I really early on felt like I belonged there. And so it expanded my notion of what family. I talked about my biological family, but, you know, when I got to Elmhurst, the sense of family just really expanded exponentially. And I remember early on as a freshman, a first year student, that first semester, and I was like a fish out of water in some ways, but felt surrounded by a community of support. And I remember distinctly, there were junior and seniors who were kind of in leadership positions, and they took many of us first year students under their wing, and we became part of their community. And I found that very unusual, actually. And I think that was that sense of community carried me through the 4 years there. And again, my sense of community just kept expanding. And I think back on my life's work now as a pastor, and particularly, I think because of what I experienced at Elmhurst, a sense of responsibility for the larger community. And I would say that one of my vocations is to build community within a congregation, but also build community in the community. And I was thinking back too, you know, where did that all come from? I could tell story after story, but I was thinking particularly of two J-term shaping events for me. And the first one was called The Servant in the City. And it was a religious studies sponsored J-term. And I think there were a group of maybe 8 or 10 of us that for the month of January lived in a church basement on the north side of Chicago and slept on the floor and ate communally, cooked together, And during the day, we were sent out into the city in various places of help and social work, basically. So I remember taking the track of mental health. And I, as I was reflecting, wanting to tell this story, oh my God, at that time, there was still a whole collection of state mental hospitals in the state of Illinois. And I remember the first week spending every day at Chicago State Mental, and it's like the movies, you know, the asylums.
Right.
It just rocked me to my core. And then subsequent weeks, we were involved with, there were like, I can't remember the name of the organization, but it was basically helping people reintegrate into the larger community when they came out of those facilities.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we would, and others did homeless and some did hunger and, you know, various kinds of things like that. And then every evening we'd come back, cook together, and we'd sit and talk about what we had seen and what we experienced and what we thought about that. And I remember that that really shaped a lot of how I looked at a much larger family, if you will. And then the second one was January of 74, which was right after Hurricane Camille hit the Gulf Coast. And people who live there still talk about Camille like they talk about Katrina. It was that devastating. And one of my friends had done a year's voluntary service through the United Church of Christ volunteer ministry program at Back Bay Mission in Biloxi, Mississippi. And because she had connections there, she said, why don't we propose a J-term to religious studies and sociology to sponsor us, seven of us, to go to Biloxi for the month of January to help with whatever we could with cleanup from Camille. And she organized us. We raised money to pay for the trip. We stayed at the mission again on the floor, cooked communally, and came back together every night and debriefed. And I think, you know, both, they had two dimensions, I guess I want to express. One was the small community that we built as a group, cooking together, living together, talking together for a whole month in conditions that weren't exactly luxurious. and then that sense of being connected to a much bigger world. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking, Scott, because I knew you were going to be interviewing me, what precipitated all of that for sure were the chaplains. Bob Sheeler and Don Stoner were the chaplains all 4 years, and we had the luxury of having two full-time chaplains when I was there. And I'll be honest, they had a lot to do with the instigation of things we did. And I credit both of them with opening my eyes and opening my understanding to a much bigger world.
And we're going to be celebrating Bob's life on Saturday this week because he has passed away.
Right.
We'll be gathering in Downers Grove at the United Church of Christ to lift him up and to give thanks to Almighty God for an amazing life.
Yep.
And I think that ties together, Bob, with this. We're in a really historic week.
Yes.
Traditionally Advent, but it's also the Festival of Hanukkah, Festival of Lights.
Yep.
So it opens us up into the questions of mystery and tikkun olam and creation. And then it opens the question up of God's salvation history. And then next week, it's the 150th anniversary of Elmhurst.
Right.
And if you step back and look at the values that we are talking about right now, and your life, the example of your life and so many, many others. I mean, when I came over this morning, I kept thinking, okay, vocation. Most people talk about vocation as clergy, you and I. But you and I both can talk about Nick Schrock, who's a lawyer and doing amazing things as a faculty member in the law school and going to be the dean of a law school. This moment right now gives us the opportunity, yes, to look back, but to also ask, what's the future and what is the vocation of Elmhurst University for its students, staff, faculty, trustees for the next 150? What would we hope to see?
Well, here's where I'm going to go with that. A few years ago, Emily Labreck was the acting director of the Niebuhr Center. And she told me about an extended conversation she had with a group of students about the values of Elmhurst. And, you know, the values of intellectual excellence and professional preparation, the values of community and social responsibility, the values of stewardship and faith, meaning, and purpose. And she asked them, do you believe that Elmhurst has these values? Okay. And the interesting response, and I've come back to this every time, they said, we only have them if we live them. If they're just words on a page or in a strategic plan, then they really aren't what we value. And if you ask me in the big picture what I would hope for whatever future we have, that we really, really dig deep into those values and say, how are we embodying those values? Not just, you know, regurgitate them on a page. But and I have to say, currently, you know, being privileged to be on the Board of Trustees and being there a fair amount, you know,
on a regular basis,
I get to see and hear those values expressed through our faculty and our administration and our staff and our students and the alumni I come into contact with. And even, you know, to a certain extent, some of our community partners and people who believe in Elmhurst University and what we stand for, and including the United Church of Christ. I mean, you and I both know we've tried to do a fair amount to nurture the relationship both ways between the United Church of Christ and Elmhurst University, because we see that we share a common set of values. And the United Church of Christ embodies those values in a certain way, and we embody them in a different way because we're a different kind of institution than the church. But rock bottom, I think those values are the warmth and light, if you will, that the world needs right now.
And it'll help differentiate Elmhurst University from so many other colleges and universities that we think of ourselves as in competition with. We know that there's a lot of strengths in those places, but we also know that there is a unique place for Elmhurst going forward, not just in the past, but going forward. And I was thinking about the fact that you talk about a community of learners and the community practice group, the What Color Is My Parachute conversation, and Parker Palmer's work. You've had the joy of using that material, not just in the church, but in the broader society, to help live out the values. And I think it's really important for us to know about that and to understand that and to actually learn from it.
Well, you know, in addition to a vocation of community building, I've realized in just the last few years that my laser focus also on helping people discover a sense of vocation as opposed to just getting a job, that there's more to life than just having what you do in your work life. And so, you know, my work with Dick Bowles on What Colors Your Parachute, which is the leading book on job transitions, and my work with Parker Palmer on Let Your Life Speak and that whole sense of vocation, I ask myself, why are you so interested in this? And I realized that I have remained so because that's where I started. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And to a certain extent, in the spirit of Parker Palmer and Let Your Life Speak, I just sort of let my life and the world speak to me and see where it would take me. I couldn't have imagined.
It has taken you.
I could not have imagined. I couldn't have planned this. I couldn't have imagined it. But I am awfully grateful for it.
Well, I know the university, and certainly I, but as the chaplain, but a lot of folks are extremely thankful for all that you've brought and bring. I know that there is in this moment, historical, the 150, that we are in a pandemic, historic health crisis, a racial reckoning that this nation needs to address, and the environmental creation justice set of questions. What will this world be, and the joy that you know when we walk across the stage, and you helped last year by shaking the hand of the class of 2021, you helped shake those hands. What kind of community will they receive, and what will they do with that? And those values are what I hope that we can keep talking about just for the next few minutes, because it's rooted, yes, in the United Church of Christ, but it's much broader, and both of us know we've been trying to help the institution understand itself as that and more. The more is the question that I know you wrestle with a lot.
Well, I think fundamentally, finally, community is not a word, it's an experience. And I don't know, I can't describe what community is or means, but I can sure tell you what it feels like. What's that quote from Maya Angelou? People will not remember what you said, but how you made them feel, something like that, right? Right. And I think of that. And I think, you know, going forward, I would hope that the size of Elmhurst makes it possible for people to gather in smaller groups enough that they experience community. And I think also, you know, if our faculty and our staff particularly stay focused on what can we do as an institution to provide those experiential learnings for our students so that they can come away going, well, I learned this in my head, but I know this in my heart. And again, I don't expect them to be able to articulate that so much as to, I think once you've experienced that level of community, you want to help others experience that.
Absolutely.
And I guess that's, to me, you know, that there's that wonderful, the history book is An Ever-Widening Circle, again, a concept that H. Richard Niebuhr developed. And I've really thought about that a lot in terms of, again, none of us could have planned or imagined the ever-widening circle that our lives became, that our school became. But if we're open to it, and if we're open to widening that circle, the community always becomes bigger. And God knows right now with the rampant tribalism in this country and around the world that's raising its head everywhere, I think, you know, Jesus talked about being the leaven in the loaf, and maybe that's what we are, a little bit of glimpse and a commitment to what true community can be and look like. And I have to hope that wherever we send our graduates, that they'll take that with them and they'll plant those seeds wherever they end up. And I have to believe that in the end, that'll make a difference.
Absolutely will make a difference. I know that the old chaplain at Yale used to say to me, Scott, until you get your head and your heart put together, you are always in conflict. And I believe that our best efforts as a university helped you put your head and your heart together.
Yes.
And find value in making a difference, however that was to be played out. And I know that conflict is good. It can be hard. And we at the institution need to help embrace that notion of building the place of security and safety, a belonging to address community, to address conflict.
Yeah, you know, I just want to share, I was a first year student on April 4th, 1968, the night that Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered. And looking back, I think that may have shaped my trajectory more than anything else. That night, you know, I came from rural Southern Illinois, predominantly white community, and I particularly wanted to experience a wider community that I did experience at Elmhurst. And I'll never forget that night after the word started to come through. There were probably 150, 200 of us that were in the union that night, through the night, holding each other, supporting each other. I discovered firsthand the depth of the hurt in the African-American friends I had that resulted from that murder, that I knew about Martin Luther King Jr. and his civil rights work and all of that, and felt passionately about that. But there was something deeper. And again, I think it relates to what it means to be a community. You talk about conflict and hurt. And to really step into someone else's deep hurt and try to understand that. And I just remember, we were up all night that night. And I remember somehow also being invited, I don't remember the sequence of things, but whether it was the next day or the day after, a service of memory was planned in the chapel. We packed the chapel. I remember being part of the kind of whatever, it was almost a blur of how that all came together. But I remember being part of planning that service and being there for the service, and remember the chapel being packed that day. And it set in motion three more years of a lot of upheaval on the campus, but being drawn into that. And I think, you know, you talked about feeling supported and feeling safe and feeling like you belong. In spite of all the kind of upheaval that we were experiencing, there was a sense that we were together as a community at Elmhurst. And it was a profound experience for me.
So two hopes of this conversation will be is maybe more people that were there that night with you, we can gather some of them and talk about what it was like to be on campus that night and what happened to you.
Well, Rosie Phillips Davis was a classmate of mine, and she would have been there, and she was the other centennial year graduate that offered greetings to the class of 2021. And frankly, I thought her greeting was way better than mine. I really appreciated, you know, and I learned something about her in that brief moment, even that I didn't know. And we had been together as classmates during those 4 years at Elmhurst. But I think it would be an interesting gathering for people that were there, because it was a moment.
We have taped, and it's on the college's website, the combination of the 55th anniversary when King spoke here and the 150th with the Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown Douglas, which is a commanding piece. And this is the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So five of our alums who were on campus also have taped a reflection about what it was like to be at Elmhurst on that day, September 11th, 2001. And maybe that's the strength of what Kierkegaard talks about. Life must be lived forward, but can only be understood backward.
Right.
And our capacity as a university to give the capacity and strength to do exactly this, to move forward, but to do serious reflection on the past. And that notion of reflection has been at the heart of what I know you understand vocation and calling for everybody, not just a particular vocation of profession, but life in general, the capacity to reflect backwards, to move forward.
Well, yeah, you know, we started there with my stories about J-term experiences, and a key piece of those was the evening coming together every evening with a small group of people and reflecting on what that day had been and what it meant. And, you know, I come to our one of our values with it, which is faith, meaning, and purpose. And I think to understand what anything means, as you say, you have to look back on what happened and then reflect on what did that mean. And in the moment, you can't fully appreciate or understand what it might mean.
Right.
And it's only now in these kinds of moments when I get a chance to, you know, talk and reflect on what it has all meant to me, that we finally begin to see the bigger picture, I guess. I think the Niebuhr Center rebranded itself to be the Niebuhr Center for Engagement and Reflection.
Correct.
And I think that's the whole piece, to engage ourselves fully in whatever we're called to do, and then to step back. So it's that kind of movement back and forth between action and contemplation, or engagement and reflection. And it's the way we move forward.
That was some of the great work that Emily LeBrec now gave us as a community here.
Right.
I'm hopeful that there's a time capsule being put together for next Monday, and they have asked me to write a letter to the chaplain 25 years from now. And what would I say to that future person, whether they are what stripe or what the institution, without looking at a crystal ball that none of us have, what is it that will endure, the enduring qualities of Elmhurst University? And I know that you and I both understand vocation and calling that cuts across everybody's life, not just a profession. Everyone has a vocation. Everyone has a calling.
Well, I guess I would say it will only endure to the extent that everyone is committed to helping it endure. And a part of that is understanding what we're trying to embody and live out so that it can endure. But, you know, each generation has to figure that out for themselves. In fact, I think I'd put that in a letter to the future. It's on you. You have to figure it out in your time, like we had to figure it out in our time. And I think in the sense of calling as a lifelong calling, a lifelong journey, I guess, you know, what I've learned is, what I think it's Woody Allen, the quote was attributed true, that life is, 90% showing up. However, you know, whatever percentage it is, but just I've learned that the only way community happens is if we show up. And the only way these values endure is if we show up.
So there's a great hymn of the Christian church by Harry Emerson Fosdick. It's a bit sexist, but if you change the language a little, once to every time and person comes the moment to decide. And maybe that's part of where we are, is we're helping foreground a moment of decision, not for the past, but for the future.
Well, I guess the only twist I'd put on that is comes a moment to decide. Well, every moment is a moment to decide. It's not some grand, I think that's, in fact, that's probably where I've come to, is when I was a first year student at Elmhurst, I thought it was a once for all decision that had to be made about what I would do with my life. And what I've learned is that it's a moment by moment decision. And the less I plan, and the more I open myself to the moment, I find, looking back, I've gotten to where I needed to be.
So I will close this time with a Maya Angelou understanding of, to be present is the wisest place to be. Not for the past, not for the future. You got to do both. But in Maya Angelou's great words, to be present is the wisest place to be.
The only place we can be.
We hope you have enjoyed this insightful discussion on vocation, and that you will join us again next month here at Calling All Voices. Again, I'm Dr. Janice Tuck-Lively.
And I'm Dr. Erica McCombs.
School we love, Elmhurst, live for it. God shed his grace on thee.